Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello and welcome to the Circling the Bases podcast. I'm DJ Short, and with me here once again is Scott Pianowski from Yahoo. We're live on Twitch this afternoon, so thanks to those of you joining us there. And also a big thank you to those listening in podcast form or watching later on YouTube. It is May 1st, believe it or not, 1 month through the MLB season. Going into May feels like it's sneaking up on us a little bit. But a lot of headlines out of the weekend. We'll get to a bunch of them here in a second. How was your weekend, Scott?
It was great until Sunday night when the Boston Bruins decided to cap off one of the greatest seasons in NHL history with a Game 7 exit. Allowed a goal in the final minute. Got beaten overtime by Florida, who just outplayed them the last half of the series. So that's playoff hockey. Tournaments are full of variants. We know in all sorts of sports, right? The Mariners had that famous season. They won 116 games, whatever it was. They didn't get to the World Series. So it's hard to win a championship. It's hard to be good in sports. Have to appreciate what you have. And so that ended my weekend on a down note, but a lot of fun stuff coming. Baseball, we got guys hurt. We got guys coming back. We got guys getting called up. We're a month into this dance. So let's get into it.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question. It's sort of about the playoff situation. This can go for all sports, but there was a post-game question from with Giannis last week when the Bucks lost about whether any season that doesn't end in championship, is that considered a failure? But how do you feel about that, Scott?
It's just one team wins the title. You have to take satisfaction out of something accomplished. Like the Buffalo Bills with the four straight Super Bowls, I don't think they're some kind of failure team, although a lot of people want to paint them with that brush.
Yeah.
Just being good, whatever your accomplishment is, you do something great in the regular season, you have a playoff run, you have a day of excellence, you throw a no-hitter, you have a four or five goal game, you score 50 points in a basketball game, whatever it is. It's so hard. One of my favorite things, I'm wearing a golf hat. I went on a golf vacation like a week ago. One thing that golf constantly reminds you of is just how hard it is and how humbling it is. And you learn how to appreciate the moments you hit a good shot, the moments you have a good day, or the ball goes where you want to go, or you get a couple of breaks, because you know how fleeting it is. Right. And that's the takeover, the spillover to that to fantasy is that if you play in competitive leagues, they're hard to win. And if you do win a league, you get to celebrate it, man. You get, you have to savor it, because it's just, there's no guarantee that you'll be back in that winner's circle anytime soon if the league is competitive. I mean, I remember looking back at friends and family results for over a 7 or 8 year period, and I was like first or second. It felt like every year, the last 3 or 4 seasons, I haven't been close to contending. It's because you guys all played fantasy baseball too. It's hard. So,
yeah.
I guess, I'm a big believer in we need highs and lows. We need some rainy days to appreciate the sunny days and stuff like that. And when you get kicked in the gut, whatever it is, you draft a player, he's out with Tommy John surgery a week later, right? Think of how excited we were for Springs of Tampa Bay a couple of weeks ago. Now he's out for the season. Jacob DeGrom's hurt again. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Maybe that makes you appreciate the stuff that went right. When you were early to a pickup, I didn't know anything about this guy, Rooker of Oakland, and now he's like a player I have both hands on. You cannot touch him. He's a fulcrum of so many of my teams. And that's that's what sports breaks our heart, but sports also renews us. Baseball is all about renewal, right? It's all about spring. It's all about, it's been cold all winter. It's finally warm out, you know, playing catch with your dad, all that stuff. So to me, I think you need the balance in life. I think you need highs and lows. I think you need to get kicked in the teeth sometimes, taste your own blood sometimes to appreciate the times when things go right.
I think there's just a burden of expectations, at least with certain teams, certain fan bases. If you spend a certain amount of money, I think it depends on the media market too. New York, for example, Yankees, Mets, it's not 162 game season.
Right.
It is 162 one game seasons. And you live and die with that. And that, you know, at times that can be fun, but at other times it's completely exhausting. So,
yeah, I'll just close with one more note. You know, so I was texting with my Bruin friends all during last night's game, and the common thread was we really weren't enjoying the game. We were all stressed for 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know, we were stressed before the game. We were stressed during the game. Of course, the Bruins fell behind right away. They came back. They went ahead. And then, of course, overtime is just constant stress. And it's like, I don't know, man. I was kind of glad when the game was over, even though they lost. I obviously wanted them to win. But and the worst day of any fan base is the day after elimination. You know, there's no more, nothing more to look forward to. No more schedules to map out. You're no longer part of the tournament. I'm happy for Seattle being Colorado. I mean, my friend Frank Schwab said misery loves company. He's a big Bucks fan. They were just eliminated, as you say, the Colorado Avalanche, the defending Stanley Cup champions. They lost to the Seattle Kraken in their second season. That's a great story. Maybe I'll take up the Kraken for the rest of the playoffs. But it's stressful, man. Hockey, playoff hockey, if you haven't watched hockey, it's unbelievable. Last night was a great game. It was a terrific game. It had scoring. It had lead changes, which I think makes sports exciting. But did I really enjoy it in the moment? I'm not sure that I did.
Yeah, sometimes when having your team in the playoffs can be a little nerve-wracking, and sometimes I don't mind it. I hate to say this as a Mets fan, because of course I want them to win. But when they're not in it, sometimes more enjoyable for me.
Yeah, you can just sit back and relax, right?
Yeah, exactly. So let's get into some of these headlines from the weekend. We'll talk Fab from the weekend as well, any interesting moves in our leagues. And then we have a fun little draft for the end of the show. We're going to lead off here, though, with Bryce Harper. We talked about this in recent weeks, that there was probably just going to be a day when suddenly Bryce Harper is active. And we knew it was going to happen soon. But so he has or had a follow-up appointment scheduled for today, Monday, with Dr. Neil Elitraj. He performed Harper's Tommy John surgery on November 23rd. And assuming Elitraj, who's one of the best athlete doctors in the world, assuming he gives the green light, Harper is expected to be activated on Tuesday when the Phillies face the Dodgers. Now, this would be the fastest player ever to return from Tommy John surgery. It would mark 160 days. Now, position players usually come back faster. We know that than pitchers. There's just different boxes you need to check there with a position player as opposed to a pitcher. But still, this is unheard of and incredible, but also I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I think back to Adrian Peterson when he broke all the rules with his ACL return. He won the MVP award going back a decade in the NFL. And man, the Phillies really need Harper. I mean, their offense right now is middle of the pack in the scoring stats. And obviously they lost Hoskins in spring training. They haven't had Harper, but they thought they were going to have at least a top 10 offense, maybe a top 5 offense. It hasn't played out this way.
Yeah.
Obviously it's so nice now that we have the DH of the National League. So the Phillies don't have to worry about, I know there's been talk about maybe Harper playing first base. That's down the road. Yeah. Right now they just want him to hit. They want him to work pitch counts. They want him to go back to being, you know, the 270, 410, 540 Bryce Harper that he usually is. And I'm here for it. I got one share of Harper. It's in the Friends and Family League where I pretty much need 5 Bryce Harpers to get back in contention, it seems like right now. But I'll take one of them. I'm usually not the guy who plays the injury optimism game, and I think usually it's a losing game. But this is one time where the player beats the timetable. We've learned, right, DJ, we've been playing fantasy a long time. One thing we've learned is usually ignore what the player says about, oh, yeah, I'm coming back early and everything. But this is one case where the player was right. And you know, barring a setback, barring something they find out in the consult, it seems like we'll have Bryce Harper back in our lives, which is just great as a baseball fan. You want them. There's like 10 or 15 players that supersede fantasy. It's just great to have them on the field. Bryce Harper's one of those guys.
Without a doubt. And, you know, this is a player who I think went from almost like consensus most overrated to now most underrated. And I think it's going to make a big impact for this lineup. And we had these indications dating back to spring training when the Phillies did not put him on the 60-day injured list. That was kind of the tell that the Phillies were like, maybe, possibly, Harper can beat that timetable, which was originally supposed to be the All-Star break. And that's what we thought going into fantasy drafts, too. But if you were lucky enough to stash him in an IL spot, which I did in a league that's actually an on-base percentage league, so I'm thrilled to have Harper at the ready. But there's certainly – I wish I would have scooped him up in some more leagues, including my NL-only labor team. That would have been a huge boost, right? I need some offense right now. But, hey, well done if you took your chance and stashed Harper out of the gate here.
By the way, I would try to trade into this lineup right now. I know Kyle Schwarber hasn't done a lot so far, yeah. And it's not like the Schwarber manager is like dying to give him away, but this could still be a top five offense. Obviously getting mm-hmm. the injection of Harper will be huge for them. I would try, you know, maybe you can get a hold of Stott somehow. You can get a hold of Alec Baum. We've talked about better days are ahead for this lineup. I still think at the end of the year, it's going to be like sixth or seventh in runs.
Me too. So before we move on here, just a quick reminder, download the RotoWorld app to receive breaking player news all season long. Stay ahead of the competition by favoriting players on your roster. Get the latest injury updates, player news, and much more delivered right to your phone. It's available in your app store today. In the league that I do have Harper in, by the way, I already put him to active. Yeah, I had to make a weekly type decision there. Already put Harper in there active, ready to go. As for one player we will not see this week, that's Jacob DeGrom. Of course, got that monster five-year, $185 million contract from the Rangers during the offseason. And we all kind of knew the deal here. The risk was baked into the contract. I don't think many teams were going to go 5 years. So, of course, Jacob DeGrom, you know, all the power in the world to him. Go ahead and get that contract. The Rangers, a team trying to make some moves in the AL West there. You can understand why they took that risk, but no surprise at all. Friday night, Jacob DeGrom leaves his start with some elbow discomfort, placed on the injured list Saturday, right elbow inflammation. Of course, everybody involved say, you know, downplaying it, you know, just going to rest for a little bit. You know, maybe he's back when he's eligible, maybe not. It's a lot of the wishy-washy talk right now. But if he throws, you know, 20 innings the rest of the season, I wouldn't be shocked. If he threw 50 more, I wouldn't be surprised. But that's just kind of the anxiety you get with Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, I used to, and I say this with empathy because I don't want to see anybody get hurt, but I used to joke about Steven Strasburg being Strasburg, because whenever you drafted mm-hmm. Strasburg, you just signed up for a six-month worry about every pitch, every game. Yeah. You know, did he land awkwardly? Is he holding his elbow? Is he holding his shoulder? And with DeGrom, it's even worse because DeGrom's a better pitcher than Strasburg was a very good pitcher, but
yeah,
DeGrom is like a healthy DeGrom is on a Hall of Fame trajectory. I look at what DeGrom's done from 2021 to 23. He's made 32 starts, 2.03 ERA, 23 walks, 293 strikeouts, and 186.2 innings. That's just absurd. He was great for Texas when he pitched this year. You know, four walks, 45 strikeouts, but who knows when we're going to see him again. And there's been people who have speculated that maybe DeGrom never really learned to dial down the velocity. Maybe he's just too all out every pitch, and that's led to stress. I'm not a doctor. I'm not Frank Drobe, Dr. Andrews. I'm not Dr. Job. I'm not Dr. Neil Trosh, any of those guys. So I can only speak to this as an informed fan and analyst, but I didn't draft DeGrom this year because I just didn't have the stress in me to do it. I didn't have the stress management to do it. I hate seeing him get hurt, but the range of outcomes with him is like he may not pitch again this season. That's in the range of outcomes.
Oh yeah.
And when he does pitch, I expect him to be great, but I think my days of drafting DeGrom are over. I'm just going to root for him as a fan, but he's not going to be a part of my fantasy portfolio. And I say that very sadly because he's my favorite guy to watch when he's healthy.
And you remember a couple of weeks ago, he left a start with a wrist issue. There's some speculation maybe he's overcompensating for the wrist, and now it's impacting the forearm elbow area, or maybe it's all related. You know, it's too soon to say for sure, but, you know, we've seen this sort of stuff with DeGrom before. We can only hope that, you know, it is minor and he gets back out there on the mound because, man, when he pitches, he is the best pitcher in the world. Spencer Strider is making a case for it. He's pitching against the Mets today. The Braves, it's the game just started. The Braves are up 3-0. Spencer Strider hasn't even gone out on the mound. This is going to be a loss for the Mets. I'm just going to make a prediction right now. And if I'm wrong, I'll be happy. So, you know, either outcome is good.
The emotional hedge. Yeah, I should have bet the Florida Panthers last night. Then I'd be happy now. Actually, I wouldn't be happy, but I'd have like 50 bucks in my account.
So Jacob DeGrom, 2.53 ERA in 215 career starts, 2 Cy Young Awards, a Rookie of the Year. I mean, we're all hoping for the best with Jacob DeGrom. Is he on a Hall of Fame path right now? He has 84 career wins. A lot of that not his fault, obviously, but what is like the fewest number of wins a pitcher got in the Hall of Fame?
Well, that it's funny. I mean, what Kershaw just got his 200th win, and there's been talk that maybe 200 is the new 300 because guys just aren't going to get the big win totals anymore. I don't think DeGrom has any chance of getting the Hall of Fame as his career is currently constructed, but it's good. The benchmarks are going to change, right? I mean, we have pitchers who are in the high 200s in wins who aren't in the Hall of Fame, which seems kind of crazy now, but the game is so different.
Yeah.
You know, the one pitcher, and he was briefly on the Mets, who I think deserves a better Hall of Fame shake is Johan Santana.
I was going to say that is the parallel.
You see the comp, right? Because Santana, dominant, but didn't have the longest career. So he didn't get to some of those counting stats, but when Santana was right, he was the best pitcher in baseball for like a 3-4-5 year window. I'm not saying Santana necessarily should be in the Hall of Fame. It's just I feel like his case was washed out. Like, nope, not a Hall of Famer. Next.
One and done.
Yeah, that's not right. He just – and maybe he'll – you know, we know there's different paths to get in the Hall of Fame and get cases get reevaluated. I actually lean in on Santana. If he's not in, that's fine. But the fact that he got discarded right away I thought was wrong, and he's the guy who DeGrom reminds me of.
Yeah, I actually saw Johan Santana's, of course, unknowingly, I saw his last start in the major leagues. He pitched against the Nationals in Nationals Park. And of course, I mean, he was hurt after the no-hitter and all that. It was one of the starts that he, you know, came back after that. I believe the Nationals won that game. But yeah, it's you don't know history when it's happening sometimes. Tyler Malley, we're not going to see him for a while either. The Twins rotation depth being tested right now, Kenta Maeda also down. So Malley's being shut down for 4 weeks with a posterior impingement and a flexor pronator strain in his right arm, had MRIs, x-ray imaging. So 4 week shutdown, you know, we're probably talking late June before we see Tyler Malley again. He's off to a good start this year at a 3.16 ERA in 5 starts, 28 walks, 5 strikeouts. In 25 and two-thirds innings. The fantasy impact here, I guess you wait for Malley if you have an open IL spot, but Louis Varland, who is a top 10 prospect in the Twins organization, looks like he'll get a rotation spot here in the interim. Mildly interesting to me, in some of the deeper leagues that I'm in, I saw Varland be a popular pickup, but with Maeda also down, it looks like Varland's going to get a chance in this rotation.
Right. You like the strikeout numbers at AAA, 25 strikeouts in 15 innings, just 4 walks. Unfortunately, with Malley, who I liked before the season, when you see he's going to be out for over a month, if you have an easy place to stash him, that's one thing. But I don't think you have to keep him because then it's a matter of, okay, then he comes back. Does he have a rehab assignment? Does he get soft-pedaled back into the rotation? How effective is he? It may be 6 or 8 weeks until you actually feel good about playing him again. So in shallow and medium formats, I don't think you have to hold him. I would try to if you could, but I wouldn't say it's mandatory. It's just frustrating because we finally saw him in a park that's more neutral. You know, Cincinnati's not a good park. They haven't had a good defense in the last few seasons. This is a guy who's gone over 200 strikeouts before. I thought he was all the dots were connecting for him to have his best season, and now that's probably out the window. Your format and your IL availability will determine what you do from here. But maybe Varland can give us some strikeouts in the meantime.
Yeah, the Twins haven't gotten much out of that trade from the Reds last season for sure. He didn't pitch much down the stretch either.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
One player who is thriving and who I didn't get nearly enough in draft season, maybe understandably, Cody Bellinger. Of course, the Dodgers non-tendered him. During the offseason, the Cubs scooped him up. Bellinger has homered in back-to-back games over the weekend against the Marlins, now up to 7 home runs on the year, has a .297 batting average, .976 OPS, also 4-for-5 in stolen base attempts. And this isn't a fluky thing. Bellinger is making contact. His contact rate is at 81.4%. The strikeout rate is at 16.2%, which is basically in line with his MVP season, chase rate down. All the indicators you want to see that he's figured some stuff out, really turned back the clock with his approach, been super impressive so far.
This is a really fun team. I don't have any Bellinger. Yeah. The Cubs currently stand second in average, second in on-base percentage, fourth in slugging, and I think they're in the top 10 in stolen bases. So I have some pieces of this lineup. I have some Horner. I have some Swanson. I have some Suzuki. But Bellinger, I kept looking at Bellinger, I can't think of the Brewers MVP, Christian Yelich, who I always link those two guys together. Yeah. And every time it was time to draft one of them, I got cold feet. I walked away. And yeah. Bellinger looks like one of the right answers. Look, we know – I never thought that much about when he really hit the skids with the Dodgers, people like, well, they solved him. He can't hit the back foot slider. Nobody can hit the back foot slider. It's a nasty pitch. You know, mm-hmm. I don't expect any left-handed hitter to really handle that. You just have to try to lay off it if you can. But the age was always on his side. He got a change of scenery at the right time. He's not going to be – the pace he's on right now is probably unsustainable, of course. Nobody thinks he's going to hit 40 home runs, but – I would think by the end of the season, we're going to look back at him as an ADP beater, and I feel regretful that I didn't get in on that. A team that I was open-minded to, you know, that's what I get from being friends with Sarah Sanchez, great baseball writer who covers the Cubs so closely, she should be on the payroll. But she got me into a bunch of Cubs this year, and that's good. Unfortunately, Bellinger was not one of them. I take full blame. It's not Sarah's fault. But just happy to see a guy. When you see somebody lose it, right? It's sad. It's mentally draining. It's nobody enjoys it. And I'm just happy for Bellinger that he's back to being a bona fide major league hitter again.
Yeah. And he's one of the leaders for that team too, which is, you know, a good role for him and the experience that he's had. I definitely got a lot of Nico Horner, which I'm thrilled with. Ian Happ as well ended up on a lot of my rosters. Mm-hmm. The Cubs are an interesting team. As for Bellinger's former team, the Dodgers, they are reportedly calling up prospect right-hander Gavin Stone to start Wednesday against the Phillies. So we have Harper coming back Tuesday, the top prospect pitcher Gavin Stone making his debut on Wednesday. Stone was a name that we got acquainted with during spring training. He struck out 14 batters over 6 2/3 scoreless innings. Had a bit of a rough start to the season in AAA, but his last two starts have been really good. 15 strikeouts, allowed just one run in that time. I think, as far as fantasy is concerned, there is some concern that this is a one-and-done type of situation where they're just building in extra rest for their starters. Dustin May, you know, still hasn't had a big workload after his Tommy John surgery, so they're building in some off days when they can. So there's a chance maybe this is one start. But if you look at Noah Syndergaard, not so great so far this season. His start yesterday was serviceable enough if you look at the box score, but just 3 swinging strikes for the whole entire start. Didn't even register a strikeout and had 2 strikeouts or fewer in 3 out of his 4 previous starts. So I don't know. I think Syndergaard could be pitching for his job here in the coming days. And Stone is a name I think maybe in the short term in a shallow league you don't pick him up, but I think he's a name to watch throughout the season.
Yeah, this rotation's in flux. I'm really curious to see what Tony Gonsolin does when he gets stretched out. He's making 2 starts. at least on paper this week. They're starting a little concerned about the control. 3.1 walks per nine in the minors. He's walking about 4.5 per nine in his brief time at AAA. Of course, it's hard. Anybody in the PCL, it's just hard to know what those stats mean sometimes because it's such a hitter favoring environment. But man, this Dodger team, it's so weird. I know they've had, you know, guys have gotten hurt. They've had paternity leave. You know, times have been batting Jason Hayward third and Chris Taylor fourth. Like, what happened to the rest of the team, right? This is a minor league B game. Just why is Jason Hayward even playing, let alone batting third? And right. Kershaw seems like one of the few stories that's working out for them so far. But I did not pick up Stone anywhere, but at least he has the strikeout upside. He has some pedigree. I can at least see the case for it. He didn't seem to fit some of the rosters I was making fab bids on this weekend, so I don't have any of him. I'll watch him with interest. But as you said, it wouldn't be a surprise if he only makes the one or two starts and then he's back down in the minors.
So kind of a matchup that snuck up on me over the weekend, the Padres and Giants played in Mexico City in a place that is actually a half mile higher than Coors Field. And we saw that on display Saturday, 11 home runs between those two teams. Sarah Lang's every day posts like all the StatCast numbers from the previous day, you know, hardest thrown pitch, you know, exit velocity, you know, furthest distance home runs. All five of the longest home runs on Saturday were from that game, which is pretty hilarious. And then yesterday I was looking at the lines because I made some picks on the Peacock post-game show. And I believe the line for total runs in Sunday's game, which was the matchup was Yu Darvish, Alex Cobb, was set at like 20 and a half runs. It finished under 10. By the way, my pick for that game, I picked Mike Yastrzemski to hit a home run. Didn't work out. There were still three Giants who hit home runs in that game. So the ball was flying out of there. And if you looked ahead and picked up some players for the weekend for those two lineups, you probably did pretty well. We'll see if they go back there next season. That's a matchup you're going to want to jump on for any series there in Mexico City. Did you see highlights from that game?
I did. First of all, I blew it because I had Joe Musgrove in a league where I could have easily benched him, and I got him exposed to that Saturday game when the run scoring went crazy.
Yeah.
As you said, you know, when I was seeing the high scoring game on Saturday, my first thought was, what's the total on Sunday? And at the time it was 19 and a half. As you said, it went even higher than that. I believe it's the highest total in Major League Baseball history, which is saying something because we've had Coors Field for a while, but it's, It was crazy. It was fun. I think the Giants offense is kind of fun anyway. We've talked a little bit about J.D. Davis. Estrada's on a bunch of my teams. Yastrzemski's starting to hit the ball again, which is good to see because he didn't have a great season last year. They're even giving us production from the catcher position, which is always welcome. And, you know, Mexico got Juan Soto to hit a home run, which was nice to see that, man. Seeing Juan Soto hit below 200, just it makes my head hurt. I know there's a lot going on with him, and did he take too many good pitches and all this stuff, but Juan Soto should never hit 186, even for a month. It wrecks all of my priors. All of my foundations I need to survive as a baseball analyst are broken when Juan Soto isn't hitting. So I'm happy to see him do something. But if you stream, the tricky thing about streaming this weekend series, they only play two games. So you didn't get the Friday game. It's always weird, right, when a team doesn't play on Friday. These two teams didn't. Yeah. But it was worth it just for what you got on Saturday alone. So I Fooey on me. I took a hit from Musgrove. I didn't need to hit. It just shows you in these weekly leagues, you really need to grind the schedule. And it isn't just Colorado sometimes. You know, sometimes it's just, I don't want to face the Astros or the Yankees or, you know, whatever offense you're afraid of. The Braves are an offense I would avoid right now. But Mexico is an offense I would avoid. So if they're going back there next year, I'll be ready for it. I'll get my over-under bets in early and I'll get my non-automatic starters on the bench. Let me ask you this. How good does a pitcher have to be before you'd pitch him in, say, a Mexico game like this or a Coors Field game? I mean, I'm pitching Gerrit Cole anywhere or Spencer Strider anywhere, but what's the line? Where's the cutoff for stuff like that?
I think it depends on the quality of the pitcher. Like anyone who's not a no-brainer, you know what I mean? Like yesterday, Darvish, I'm starting him. You know, he's one of my horses. And he did get the strikeouts too. Alex Cobb was like a little more in the line for me, and he did pitch better than Darvish. So sometimes you just never know. I think it's any pitchers who, you know, gives up pitches to contact in that kind of environment. That's where you get a little bit nervous. So I still would have started Darvish yesterday in any leagues where I had him. Cobb would have been a little more iffy for me, and he did fine. So.
I think after Saturday, I probably would have benched Cobb, but I didn't have that choice anywhere. But as it is with Musgrove now, I just feel stupid. Although Musgrove is, he's a really good pitcher. He threw a no-hitter last year.
Yeah, I would have started him anyway. You know, going into that game, I probably would have started him because I was just unaware of how favorable the environment was. I know the dimensions were favorable too, but just that altitude and the impact they would have on balls flying out of there.
Yeah, my friend Jim Geary, great Scrabble player, poker player, chess player, he talks about something called the fallacy of the negative instance, which is that when you make a decision that doesn't work out, you immediately assume you must have made the wrong decision. And that isn't always the case. It's just confirmation bias and result bias can mess with your head sometimes. And a lot of times just, okay, I did the right thing. It was a good process. It was the right choice to make. It's just sometimes, you know, they play the games. That's how baseball goes, Susan.
Exactly. just a reminder here, Sunday morning means MLB Sunday leadoff on Peacock. Watch exclusive live games all season long on Peacock. Catch an interleague showdown as the upstart Orioles, who are on fire, travel to Atlanta to face the Braves. Catch the action live this Sunday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. And credit to the Orioles. The start the Rays have had, which is incredible, as we've noted many, many times during this show, they're 23-6 right now. The Orioles are only 3.5 games behind the Rays, which is pretty incredible.
What a fun team Baltimore is, just with all that young talent. The idea that this is like a plane taking off, right? I mean, this is a team, they could be the bullies of the AL East in a year or two. Maybe, who knows? Maybe by the end of the year, they could be at the top of the division. It's one of my favorite teams to watch.
If they could get some in-season additions to the rotation, especially, they could be a serious threat as far as playoffs go.
You know what's crazy? I'm looking at the standings right now, and hats off to Baltimore for staying in at 3.5 out. Toronto's 4.5 out. The Rays have 103 run differential. Baltimore's 25, Toronto's 14. Actually, every team in this division, by the way, plus in the run differential, and every team's over 500.
Yeah.
So we're back to the – you know, the AL East used to be the big kid on the block. And this year I was like, well, the Red Sox are down and we'll see if Baltimore is going to be as good as they were last year. Once again, this has become kind of the division to avoid.
Totally. And the Rays are going to get even more help. Tyler Glasnow is set to begin his minor league rehab assignment on Tuesday. He's been thrown live batting practice. Of course, he suffered an oblique injury in late February. It's kind of a severe one. Ended up costing him, 6-8 weeks here. But when he comes back, we know the talent is through the roof. It's kind of a DeGrom situation where, if he's healthy and at his best, he can be one of the best pitchers in baseball. It's just a matter of whether he can stay healthy. So I want to go over quickly before we do another fun little draft to end the show. Any interesting stuff in your leagues as far as pickups, fab bids over the weekend? I wasn't super active in my league. I don't know if it's just one of those weeks, but I wonder if you saw anything.
Yeah, I ended up with a lot of Nick Senzel and a lot of Vince Velasquez. Granted, Oviedo is another Pirates pitcher who bit me up this week. We didn't pitch well on the weekend. And Velasquez is a known commodity, but he's been good the last couple of starts. Pittsburgh's been a fun team. Not that I think Pittsburgh is going to sustain what they're doing, but maybe they can be like a 500 team. They're competitive. They're also running like crazy. They're easily the leader in stolen bases this year. It's a fun team. It's a park I got to get to. It's one of my favorite parks I've never been to. So Velasquez, I have some shares of now. Senzel, I was aggressive with in some deeper league where anybody who's playing every day is valuable. We know Senzel checks that box of a post-type sleeper. I just think he just needs to stay healthy and maybe have the Reds let him play one position for once and leave him alone. I did get Tanner Bibby earlier in the week in a league where you can make first-come, first-serve pickups. I didn't get him in any of my fab bidding, and Logan Allen is pitching well for the Guardians too. I think Cleveland will eventually rise above what's been a very ugly AL Central to this point. Everything's gone wrong for the White Sox. The Tigers look bad. The Royals look bad. I feel like Cleveland already has the best lineup or the best roster in that league, in that division, and now they're adding a couple of arms. I mean, Bibby's slider looked filthy. Sometimes when a guy like that comes up, I just want to have him on one team. So if he pops, at least I know I'm not FOMO'd out of it. But I didn't have the fab leverage or maybe even the need to go after him in some of the leagues where people were throwing 3-digit bids at him. So I only got the one share of him. Were you interested in him at all? Did you get any Allen anywhere?
I didn't get any Allen. I did pick him up in a league where he was on waivers. So it was kind of free for all during the week. So I felt good about that. In my TGFBI league, Bybee went for the highest bid, 187. Logan Allen the second, 127. So those were the top priorities as far as pitching in my league. I did see Vince Velasquez, both in my Tout Wars Mixed League and in TGFBI. It was very popular as well. I dropped Michael Fulmer, finally given up on that
idea.
And I got Jorge Lopez with the Twins. I know it's kind of a timeshare there with Yoan Duran, you know, one of those dominant relievers in baseball, but Lopez will still get his chances. He's pitching well. So, you know, I felt good about that. I saw Louis Varland, who we mentioned earlier in the show, picked up in a couple of leagues as well. Alex Call has been pretty underrated with the Nationals. He was picked up over the weekend. Also, Matt Mervis, it looks like he's getting stashed in a lot of places with the Cubs. Probably just a matter of time before he gets a chance. He was a pickup as a reasonable stash. Some leagues, especially in Tout Wars, if you pick up a player like Mervis, you have to put him in your lineup for a week. So that is a dead spot on your roster, but that could pay off later.
I apologize. Yeah, you're right. Bybee, not Bibby. I don't know why I'm mispronouncing that. Yeah, another guy I picked up. With catchers, you have to overlook flaws sometimes. And you look at Blake Sable, 3 walks, 28 strikeouts, 233 average, 292 OBP. So why would I want this guy? Well, he's got a 483 slugging. He's hit 5 home runs, and he's getting fairly regular playing time. Yeah, we saw last year with Cal Raleigh, right? I mean, is he a perfect player? No. Is he going to help your average? No. Can he hit 20-plus home runs? Yeah, I guess he can do that. Sable just looks like that type of player to me that is going to get it. Maybe he's going to get 370 at bats. Maybe he's going to hit 18 to 22 home runs, and that's going to currency in any format where you need two catchers.
Another player who I think everyone is getting hot on right now, understandably, Yennier Cano with the Orioles. He is off to a ridiculous start so far. And we talked about, you know, you reach a certain point in the year, you start sorting leaderboards by strikeouts and whip and all that kind of stuff. Cano is someone you want. 12 strikeouts, no walks, no hits allowed over 11 innings out of the Orioles bullpen this season so far. Is he going to get saves this year? Probably not, given the hierarchy there. But someone who can help you throughout the week, ratios, strikeouts, great pickout there by the Orioles from the Twins in a trade last year. Working out swimmingly so far. He's getting rostered in a lot of leagues at this point. So someone.
Yeah, I love looking at the reliever boards now and just looking for those 2 walk, 17 strikeout guys, even if they're not getting saves. And it helps if they're on a winning team, because then they could maybe have a path to wins or high leverage work. It may not mean saves, but because we know more wins are getting filtered into relief these days than maybe were a generation or two before. So these guys are valuable, especially when they're on winning teams.
All right. So we did a draft at the end of our show last week some of our favorite album covers. We're going to do another fun one today, especially with NFL draft analysis still all over the place. We're going to continue with that draft theme here. But today, we are going to draft our favorite TV sitcom theme songs of all time. I'm going to let you go number one again, Scott. We did our prep time today. I had a 45-minute drive into the office today, and I was just jamming out to old sitcom songs. It made a pretty enjoyable drive into the office today.
Good man. I was listening to the No Laying Up review of the 1991 to 1993 golf majors. I'm living in the past, and I will live in the past with this draft. I apologize to anybody who's a millennial. You may not know any of these shows, but I'm going to start with the Sanford and Son theme, which is just a classic.
Oh.
I'm not sure how great the show is, and I'm not sure if the show would fly today, but it's a show about a father and a son. They run a salvage yard, a junkyard, and it's just funky as hell, man. In fact, back when I joined, I went up to LA around 2000 and worked in what was Broadband Sports. They had bought RotoWire at the time. I was working for RotoWire. And one of the guys, Tim Schuler, was one of my colleagues. He's still at RotoWire. And he decided that one of our colleagues his theme song would be the Sanford and Son theme. Whenever he would come into the office, he'd just fire it up. We all had a theme song. I don't know what mine was. I was in there so much. I don't think I ever came in and had my music played. But Sanford and Son was Scott Gleason's theme music. Good Times in LA, classic theme. I'm not sure it's a great show, but it's a great theme song.
Yeah, and it's one of those songs that just identifies so much with Red Fox. Like, you see Red Fox and you're like, that fits together. It's perfect. It was on my short list of songs as well. I remember my brother and I, when we were kids, how much we loved that song. Just a perfect, funky, earworm type of song. And I'm 100% on board with you, Sanford and Son. Perfect. Perfect song. I'm going to go with kind of a, you know, there's an age difference between you and I. We can acknowledge that. I'm a kid of the 90s and 80s. But I'm going to go Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Theme song has to be my number one pick. A song that I think I've been singing since I was, you know, 10 years old and has followed me all the way through adulthood. Lots of replay value with those episodes. But yeah, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is just automatic for me.
Yeah, Will Smith's catalog, I think, has aged really well. Of course, he branched out and became a really good actor as well. And it's been in the news lately for different reasons, but plus, he's doing great bang-up work for the, you know, he's closing games for the Rangers. He's got cleanup for the Dodgers. Will Smith's everywhere. Do you know, by the way, the Rangers have the second highest run differential in baseball? I just realized that. I didn't know that. Even with DeGrom getting hurt just now, and obviously Corey Seager got hurt, so something's going wrong for the Rangers. They're in first place in that division. It wouldn't be fun if they finally have a competitive team. Oh, man. All these shows, man. You know what? I'm just going to do it. It's a show that a lot of people don't want to admit that they love it, but it's a great show. I'm going to go with the Golden Girls. The theme song is Thank You for Being a Friend. And I remember being at my friend Greg Worthen's house. I didn't know the song at the time that well. And he starts singing, if you had a party and invited everyone you knew. And he stopped singing. I'm like, what happens then? What's the next line? nobody knew what it was. But the Golden Girls, a funny show, a sassy show. We just lost Betty White in the last year, but a timeless show, and I think a wholesome show, and yet a funny show that pushed the envelope at times, and a really great theme song.
My next pick is the Perfect Strangers theme song. Very inspirational song. You know, standing tall on the wings of my dream, rise and fall. On the Wings of My Dream, very inspirational song. I also love the cuts in within the theme song when you're watching it. You're like, yes, this is happening in Chicago. They're outside Wrigley Field. It's windy. They're like blowing down the street. It's a great song.
Great pick by you. I got one more pick. I'm going to tell you things I am not going to pick. I'm not going to pick the Barney Miller theme, my so-called life theme, which is actually more of a drama. The music of My So-Called Life was fantastic. What an underrated show that was. 19 Perfect. Episodes. Go back and watch it. The Partridge Family theme was really good. That was not a good show, but the music was pretty good. This isn't even a sitcom. And maybe this is just an excuse for me to talk about myself for a second, which I'm usually not about that. But I'm going to pick the Electric Company theme. Specifically, I think it's from season 3 or season 4, where Rita Moreno comes out and says, hey, you guys. And they play this minute-long theme. It sounds like it's from the musical Hair. It's just cool. It's hip. It's funky. And a little fun fact about me. Growing up, my dream job was not to be a sports writer or baseball player or fireman or anything. I wanted to be a writer for the Children's Television Workshop. I wanted to write for Sesame Street. I wanted to write for Electric Company. I love how Sesame Street would educate the kids. It was a very decent show, but it would wink at the adults with references that only the adults would get. I thought that was so cool. And I didn't like the Electric Company quite as much as Sesame Street, but the Electric Company theme is a banger. It's in and it's out. It's a minute. It's uplifting. It will have you ready to go. You need some enthusiasm to start your day off. I'm telling you, season 4 Electric Company theme will not let you down.
Man, this is tough. I will say one that I remember. Do you remember the Charles in Charge theme song?
For sure. Got Bayo and Willie Ames, man. Yeah, classic work by those two.
So the whole conceit of that show is a little bit disturbing in the first place, but also the lyrics, now that I'm reading the back, are super disturbing as well. Charles in Charge of Our Days and Our Nights.
Yeah, don't Charles put Charles in Charge.
Charles in Charge of Our Wrongs and Our Rights. I want Charles in Charge of me. I feel like This is a little disturbing.
It also coincided with the rise of Charles Barkley, which was kind of interesting. So, you know, like Barkley would have a big game and the headline would be Charles in charge.
Yes, that's true. That's perfect. Newspaper writers.
Scott Baio seems so innocent on Happy Days, and he ended up being, I don't know what happened to Scott Baio. And then Willie Ames became like Bible man and everything. He had a really weird life too.
Yes, yes. And there was also, do you remember Small Wonder?
I do.
Remember that show?
Didn't watch that it, but I remember it, yeah.
I watched it a lot as a kid. That is also kind of a creepy conceit as well. You have a child robot, you know, taking care of your family and stuff. It's weird. But that was like a time when there was like Alf.
So I Alf, right? Yeah, I had a crush with a girl on Alf. I always thought she was adorable.
My last pick, though, and there's so many good ones, like lots of instrumental songs which are like iconic too, like. The Odd Couple, I remember.
Great one. Great. There's a show that does hold up.
Yeah. Dragnet, Andy Griffith's show, of course, like those are iconic songs. So we're not necessarily picking the best.
But Laverne and Shirley's theme is great. I think it's a horrible show, but their theme song for that is really good.
Yeah. So this is kind of in line with your last pick. I'm going to go with the Muppet Show.
Love it.
Theme song. You know, it's time to play the music. It's time to play the lights. It's time to meet the Muppets on the Muppet Show tonight. And, you know, the different characters are chiming in throughout. I mean, that always got me super psyched as a kid. Nostalgic memories of that show. So I have to go with that one.
I just love the way they balance out the characters, right? I mean, on Sesame Street, you have Oscar the Grouch. On the Muppet Show, you have those two, Statler and Waldorf, who were just criticizing the show from the balcony, the peanut gallery.
Yes.
You know, it's awesome. Jim Henson is just American treasure, and we can never thank him enough for having his fingerprints all over this stuff. We're educational, just humorous, creative, you know, distinctive. Jim Henson, one of one. It's a great, great final pick. I'll also mention, if I ever find myself at a karaoke bar, which is not really my thing, I try to pick the shortest song possible if I have to sing. And sometimes I would sing the Three's Company theme because it's just really short. People know it. Another show that doesn't hold up. The whole conceit of Three's Company is that there's an innuendo that somebody mishears something and mistakes it for something else.
Every time.
That's the whole show. Every episode's like that. I think this is the episode where somebody mishears a conversation and takes it the wrong way, right? This is the episode where they almost get off the island, right? It's not really a good show, although John Ritter is terrific as the lead and very likable as Jack Tripper. We lost John Ritter young. He was a big Mets fan, by the way.
Was he?
But if I'm doing karaoke, I'll belt out the Three's Company theme because you're in and you're out in like 50 seconds.
I seriously thought about Three's Company as my final pick too. Just classic. And the fact that I knew it was predictable as a show, like, kind of made it comforting in a way.
It's comfort food, right? It's like eating mac and cheese on your couch. You know, it's not really good for you. It has no sustainable value, but in the moment it feels good.
Yeah, I think there was a reference to that, to the whole like setup of a Three's Company episode on an episode of Friends. Like, oh, this is the one, I think Chandler says it. He's like, oh, this is one where there's a misunderstanding.
Right. And that's, so let me ask you this. Totally what's the best sitcom of all time?
I mean, for me, it's Seinfeld.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would say that. My favorite sitcom was the first 3 years of Cheers before Coach dies. I think Cheers breaks up into three very specific pieces. I think it's fantastic when Coach is still alive and Nicholas Colasanto. He dies after the third season. And then they have three more years, I believe, with Diane. I think it's still a strong show. And I think the show just runs out of gas. It's like, you know, where is the relief pitcher with the late Kirstie Alley? And it just the characters became one note. If you watch the early episodes, a lot of times they're dramatic and not everybody is painted into one corner. I think the writers kind of ran out of ideas in the second half of the show, but the first 3 years of Cheers I thought were amazing. I don't blame you for mentioning Seinfeld. Obviously a runaway fantastic show. Curb Your Enthusiasm's had an amazing run. The Simpsons has been on TV. It feels like 100 years. It's still funny as hell. Family Guy is a very funny show. I don't watch Family Guy all that often. And every time I watch it, I'm like, I should watch this all the time. It's so irreverent. It's so clever. The references are just completely out of left field. And Seth MacFarlane is a genius. I'm a big Family Guy fan. But I think a lot of people, I think if you polled like 1,000 people randomly, I think Seinfeld would probably win.
And I don't even watch Seinfeld that much anymore, but it's one of those shows that is so ingrained in me that if I see an everyday scenario, I'm like, oh, this, and I do this on Twitter all the time. I'm like, this will apply to some Seinfeld gif or moment. and people get it. People understand it. There's not many shows left that can do that, I feel.
I'll also say that my favorite Curb Your Enthusiasm episode was the Hall of Fame episode, where Rosie O'Donnell was accusing Larry David of juicing. Fantastic. Also, they used Bill Buckner in a great episode. The late Bill Buckner for being able to laugh at himself and have kind of a redemption lap in the final run of his career, which was great. Sure. He got to go back to Boston. He was applauded and treated the way he should have been. He didn't lose the World Series, but Larry David, comedic genius. Obviously, Jerry Seinfeld's a genius, and I'm just glad they're still doing things today.
Yeah, we'll have to do a draft at some point of the best sitcoms of all time. Not just the music, but the actual content.
I love that we're doing these drafts, man. It was my favorite part of the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball podcast, which has been infinitely on hiatus. Maybe it's coming back someday. We'll see. But I always loved it. We drafted a lot of silly things. I was over the moon when you sprung the album draft on me by surprise. You did give me time to think about this one to the point that again, 90%
you got
draft preparation, 10% baseball preparation. But I'm glad for bringing it back, man. And give us some feedback. What should we draft? What are your favorite theme songs or your favorite sitcoms? This show is all about your input. So let us know what you like, what you don't like, and let us know what we got wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to talk fantasy baseball, but we are actual people who sometimes do things other than watch baseball. So, you'll get to know
us. We have a lot of overlap in musical taste. I know, I know you've played that Wilco album into the ground.
Oh, yes. So, a lot more to come, and we'll see you Wednesday, Scott. We have something fun planned for the Wednesday show as well. So, looking forward to that. Remember to subscribe to Circling the Bases wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate and review if you like what you're hearing. Also, follow us on Twitter if you don't already. Scott is at Scott_Pianowski on Twitter. I'm at DJ Short. Ronald Acuna Jr. just hit a ball about 500 feet. So definitely check that
out.
We'll
do that.
Also, take care, everyone. We will see you next time.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.